Hey, folks. My name is Dr. Amy Perlman. I'm a board-certified urologist with expertise in sexual, hormonal, and genitourinary health. And I have a very special guest with us today on Pearls and Perspectives. I have Dave Kanes. Dr. Kanes, say hello to the crew.
How are you, Amy? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing awesome. Dave, I don't remember how we initially met, but I think we've known each other for probably 2 or 3 years at this point. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. I think we must have met at one of the many urology conferences.
Yeah, I mean, you're a mover and a shaker. You're shaking hands and kissing the babies with everyone.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a reference to the fact that I have 5 kids, but I do love babies.
It was not a reference to that, but you definitely have owned that skill. So let's give the audience a little bit of some background here. You're a urologist. You are affiliated with Lahey Clinic. You see patients in New Hampshire and in Massachusetts. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about your practice? What are the types of things you like to do in a given day, Dave?
So I have a practice that is a little bit of a hybrid practice. A lot of what I do, about 80%, is minimally invasive onc. But because I started doing robotic surgery in 2006-ish, I end up doing a lot of benign cases as well, benign upper tract reconstruction. And then I do some kidney stone work. It really helps me de-stress after the onc cases. So I have an interesting hybrid practice that's mostly oncology.
And in addition to that, you've also delved into the tech and efficiency space, and you have your own company, and we're going to really delve into that today. But going back to like what you do in a typical day, how do you balance, right? One, like raising your 5 kids, and also managing your clinical duties and starting your own tech business.
Yeah, I it's a constant work in progress. I will not say that I have it all figured out, but I will tell you that I am pretty efficient at what I do in each of those domains. And that is not accidental. It's by design. I've always sought systems in each one of those domains for me to feel like I'm not expending too much energy getting a lot of things done. So, you know, it's time management and it's being intentional and it's, again, it's a work in progress, and it's challenging. I think you could say clearly that my plate was full before I even decided to start a business. And it's only possible for 2 reasons. One, I'm extremely passionate about it, and it was an idea that didn't leave me alone. And two, I think I'm pretty good at figuring out the fastest, most efficient ways of doing things.
So we oftentimes talk about women in medicine and how we have to juggle a lot of things, including childcare. But I want to hear the male perspective.
Yeah, you know, I think...
do you have it any easier as a man?
No. Well, I do in a way, and my wife and I talk about this a lot. Even though I'm consciously aware of it, a lot of the responsibilities still disproportionately fall on moms compared to dads. And in the medical field, there's good literature to suggest that burnout rates are higher in women. So this is something that I'm really glad you brought it up, because this needs to be talked about more. I'll give you a small example. Where possible, we've tried to make my number the emergency number at school on the form. That seems like a tiny little example, but I just bring it up because it's one way you can try to make sure that the phone calls are interrupting dad as much as they are mom. But this is still a constant struggle in my household, that my kids still want to go to mom reflexively to ask the first question and not to dad. And we're, you know, I'm constantly trying to redirect that, and it's difficult. I do not have that all figured out, but I think, you know, as a community, we should be talking about that specific question much more. Why is it that more of the responsibility falls on mom. If you're doing a full clinic and you're a female physician, the pattern interruptions and the context switching happen so much more to female colleagues than it does to male colleagues, and that's not okay.
It's so interesting that you mention that emergency contact story right there, because it's essentially who's going to be on the piece of paper that says, if there's an emergency in the ER, who am I calling? And we know just being on that list can provoke some anxiety knowing that we're always on call.
Yep.
So that's really, that's a big move of you.
Well, you know, you'd be surprised how many places phone numbers are written and you can't catch it. My wife still gets calls from the school nurse, even though we tried to switch it to my number. It's a battle, you know, but again, you know, this is something we need to figure out. And that's just one small example. But even though it's 2025, I would say sadly, as a profession, we have not even come close to addressing that problem. You know,
that is your mission, right?
It's part of it. I mean, my biggest mission is to try to make sure people love what they do when they get to work and they feel like they did when they were an undergrad deciding to do this job. That's my mission.
Wow.
My very strong feeling, I'll take this to my grave, is that there was a moment when we all decided, you know, for me, I was observing in the Yale New Haven pediatric emergency room. That was my first experience watching doctors. And I fell in love with it when I was in the room observing the doctor and the patient. It was magical. And I think each of us has some kind of moment like that. But then we completely drift away from that. Not always, but those of us who've experienced burnout abstract ourselves away from that, and it becomes a job. And all of the administrative stuff eats away at that central core that we find so fulfilling. So that is my mission. So yes, being bombarded from phone calls from the school takes away from that. It takes away from, that's one of the many things that we should be in a bubble there when we're with the patient, and everything else should bounce off to the extent possible.
So your mission is to bring the magic back to the bedside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the way you phrase that. It really is. And it comes from my own burnout, to be honest with you, Amy. I've been in and out of it several times. The worst of it was around 2016, 2017. And it just took some introspection for me to say, you know, what is it that's bothering me and can I fix it?
So then how do you go from your own experience to saying, now I want to help other people fix it? What turned that switch or what flipped that switch?
I'll tell you exactly how it happened. So I was explaining a prostate cancer to an engineer in his late 60s and with Gleason 9 prostate cancer. And one of the things that always made me feel good was being in that vulnerable moment, one of that patient's darkest moments of his life, to be there to be able to send this message. It's okay. I got you. You know, we're going to get through this together. And there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And I know this is scary and all that kind of thing. That's a really amazing privilege to be able to do that for another human being. But I was completely outside myself in my Gleason score talk track, my spiel. And, you know, I can give that in my sleep. And that distance that I felt from the patient in that moment for the thousandth time was very upsetting to me. And feeling like clinic was more like Groundhog Day than it was a series of meaningful interactions started to drift. And I thought, God, this is awful. I'm not being the the doctor that I aspire to be. And if there was a student in the room with me right now, I don't think they would be admiring what I'm doing here.
And this was how many years into you being a practicing urologist?
This was about 8 years.
Yeah, so it's not like this is like 30 years down the line. Like you're pretty new in your career.
No, it's 8 to 9 years. And from talking to other doctors who've been through burnout, there's something about that 8 or 9 year mark. I don't know if it's totally reproducible, but you're outside of the zone of wondering how you'll be at the job. You're kind of settled in. The initial severe anxiety that you feel coming out of training has subsided, and you're settling into your own as a doctor. And maybe you're far enough in that certain decisions start to become repetitive, and maybe you're starting to notice the repetitive things that we do. At least for me, that's what it was. So I started pre-sending educational materials to patients to try to just help myself, not planning anything grandiose. And it was really impactful. I mean, I noticed when the patients reviewed the materials beforehand, I was able to have the kind of conversation that I really wanted to have, and frankly, that the patient wanted to have as well. We got to the parts of the detailed personal things that we normally didn't have time to get to, or we'd cram it into the last 3 minutes of the visit.
Well, give an example.
Yeah, I'll give an example. I'll stick to prostate cancer because I brought it up. If a patient reads the NCCN guide for prostate cancer and watches a video on the steps of a robotic prostatectomy and a decision guide on radiation versus surgery, if they just do that and they come into the visit, we can pretty quickly get to answering their questions, which, you know, that list of questions normally surfaces at the end. That question list surfaces at the beginning, and we can pretty quickly get to looking at the MRI together and saying, hey, you see, this is where your nerve is. And the patient can say, oh, yeah, you talked about nerve sparing on the video. I remember that. Yeah, you see how close this is? This is the cancer. And the patient is there with you. You really feel like shared decision making. It's such an elusive term, but it feels good. You feel like you're telling them the eighth or ninth step of the conversation, and the visit is barely begun. And yes, I understand why we can't save the nerve on that side. What about the dorsal vein? I saw in the video that you cut that vein. Do you put that back together? Good question. No, we don't put that back together, and this is why. And that's an unpredictable conversation that is very enjoyable, because I like interacting with people. It's like a conversation in your personal life. You meet somebody new and you don't know really where the conversation's headed. It's great. It's wonderful. I can focus on building a rapport with this gentleman and finding out what he does for a living and all those things that if I was having surgery would make me feel really good about developing some kind of bond with this doctor who I don't know, who I have to entrust with, you know, cutting me open under anesthesia. What an awful experience to go through. So when I'm doing those things in a prostate cancer visit, so the needle goes into the prostate and we can give it a score of 3, 4, or 5, and Gleason 3+4 is better than 4+3. And by the way, we just changed those to grade groups, and I don't want to, it's not that I resent that conversation, but where is it written that I have to explain basic pathophysiology from square one every day? It isn't written anywhere.
Many times a day.
Many times a day. So, you know, we're such a giving group. Doctors self-select. We're very generous. We feel guilty about things. We feel like we owe it to our patients, which is great. It's part of what makes us great doctors, but it makes us do silly things over and over without complaining. And to me, that's a problem. Sometimes we got to stand up and say, you know what? I don't think this is the best use of my time or the patient's time. I want to get to the good stuff. every conversation. And the only way I can do that is if I have my patients do a little bit of preparation, just like they do in college when you go to class, just like they do in high school. If you're going to go into a teaching relationship with somebody, you give them some work to do beforehand. That's this idea of a flipped classroom. So, but we're a timid group. We're a group of non-complainers. And so
we do complain, though.
We do complain. But do we complain? Do we complain just to each other behind closed doors, or do we actually fix it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So then I thought, God, am I crazy? Let me see if I can have some of my friends try out this pre-education system. So I had about 10 urology friends of mine try this out. And it was just a prototype at that point that I whipped together. And they started coming back to me and saying, this is incredible. I'm enjoying clinic again. And a couple of friends took the QR code of their, what at that point was a prototype well prep page, and they put it on their business card. And I've said this before in other podcasts. I've had a lot of dumb ideas in my life. But when an idea won't leave you alone, it's a pretty good sign that there's something to it. I could not stop thinking about this. And when I got feedback from other doctors, that's when I knew I've got to get this out there to as many doctors as I can, because we're all struggling. And this is not a burnout cure, but it is one piece of the puzzle.
Wow. So tell me about like the actual like details of starting this business. So you started like an LLC, and then how did you build the prototype?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And I hope people out there who are listening to this have an idea. And what I want to tell those people is you don't need permission to go ahead. No one's going to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you know what? You can start a business. It's okay. You don't have an MBA, and that's fine. There's nobody out there like circling the wagons waiting to rescue us. So do it. Just start one step. So for me, yes, reserving a domain name and starting an LLC and doing just the first few steps was enough momentum for me to get started. I hired a software development team with the prototype, which, you know, there's a lot of ways to prototype software these days. There's things called no-code tools where you can drag and drop. Right now, there's something called vibe coding, which you wouldn't believe. It didn't exist when I started WellPrep, but you can, in a chat interface, describe the app you want, and it actually builds it.
I know my sister's doing something like that right now. And she's like, I spent so much money in the past, and with $100, I rebuilt my app.
I have the same feeling. So for me to start WellPrep, there was a hefty financial, a personal investment, and I could do it now at a fraction of the cost, and then bring a development team a much more fully baked idea, which cuts down on the real development cost. I mean, it's very unlikely as of today that you can vibe code an app that can just go out there into the world in production, but at least can shortcut the wireframing and initial development cycle. So, I was fueled by the idea that, you know, for every doctor that tried it, they would be emailing me thank you emails. Thank you so much. The patients are coming in saying thank you. I'm enjoying the conversations I'm having with my patients. Those thank yous from doctors was as meaningful to me as the feeling that you get when you help a patient. And so, you know, that became my fuel, and it just felt like something that I had to do. And every moment is enjoyable when I work on it. So that's how it happens. But for people out there who have ideas, I think the best ideas are going to come from doctors who are experiencing the problems on the front lines. And there's precedent for that. You know, a lot of great software products out there in healthcare, some of the AI scribe companies founded by physicians. What a wonderful outgrowth for people who have experienced the pain firsthand.
So I've used your technology before, and I agree, I found it extremely helpful. So, and a lot of my colleagues have used it as well, but there are also a lot of people that haven't. Why it can it be so difficult to get doctors and healthcare systems to say yes to a technology that we know will improve efficiency and reduce something like burnout, that will reduce what we bitch about all the time? Why can that be so difficult?
If I could summarize in one word, it would have to be inertia. Inertia is such a powerful force. We can end a clinic day exhausted, emotionally exhausted, completely spent, coming home an hour later to our friends and family or whatever outside draw that we love, and still not doing anything about it. I mean, somebody can know, for example, that they haven't really spent a lot of time on their EHR shortcuts and templates. They know they've got to do it one day, and then 10 years go by and they never fix it. I think it's this some mistaken idea that changing the workflow is going to be really hard, really disruptive. I don't know exactly, but I experience, if you have an idea, let me know. But I do experience this quite often. Part of it is also this feeling of needing to ask permission. And I'm going to keep trying to fight this as hard as I can. But God bless doctors, even sometimes in private practice, will say to me, "This is great. Am I allowed to show my patients this? Am I allowed to show my patients this? What do you mean? Like, this is the way you teach all day long. You tell a patient, I want you to go to GoodRx and get a script for Cialis. Why not put it on the link on your page? But you tell a patient, go to nccn.org. Then there's a tab for patients, and I want you to search your cancer type. What a terrible experience. But you do that all day long. And so this feeling of needing to ask permission is, I suppose, it's safe. And again, it's part of what makes us wonderful doctors, that we are risk averse. But, you know, well-prepped is not a risky proposition. And but I suppose it takes a certain personality to just overcome the inertia and say, yep, I'm going to try it.
Well, I think part of it, too, is oftentimes when we start at a new job or facility, we're taught what not to do when it comes to our online presence. And rarely are we taught, this is what you can do. This is how you do it well. And these are all the opportunities for you to create an online platform. Like, that's never been part of any sort of initiation or introduction to starting a job.
That's true. That's true. At the same time, a doctor will start a LinkedIn profile without notifying their employer, right? So it's sort of inconsistent. But I'm sure you and I agree, a huge unlock for anybody's practice is curating your online presence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see it now. I started curating my own online presence at least 16 or 17 years ago, and it pays off to this day. How did you find me? Oh, I found you online. You know, constantly. So why not engage the patient to help you in your own workflow? This is another way of looking at it. Doctors will exert a considerable amount of energy in their own workflow, pre-charting, making sure their staff gets outside films, collating records, summarizing records, you know, having a huddle with their MA and their nurse before clinic, spending time documenting, et cetera, et cetera. Patient education is a lever that people don't think to pull. And patients are more than happy to help you because they're hungry for information anyway. It's sort of a cheat code that is just not on a lot of people's radar. And for that reason, it's become my passion to put that out there, plant the seed. Hey, are you considering this? And it doesn't have to be well-prepped. Use any pre-education system. It could be homegrown. It could be your own. But don't omit an opportunity to make yourself more efficient by involving the patient.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like with our discussion so far, Dave, we've done a lot of foreplay with regards to your application. So let's get into it. Tell the people watching, what is WellPrepped?
WellPrepped is a simple web app. It makes clinic day less tedious by allowing you to send vetted education resources to your patients before they arrive or on the way out so that you can have exactly the kind of conversations you and the patient want to have. And you can expend your best energy in the most fulfilling part of your day, having one meaningful personal interaction with each patient one by one. The way it works is if we handed our users an empty vessel and we said, okay, go ahead, now you do the work of filling it with education materials, nobody would use it. So what we do is we have, and this took a few years, curated the best of the open source web from trusted resources that you already know. The Urology Care Foundation, AUA, EAU, JAMA patient pages, materials that you'd be proud to show your patient. And by the way, also end up increasing your authority in the patient's eye because they're trusted resources. And when you sign up for WellPrep, all of your pages are pre-populated with what we call seed content. And so from day one, you could just share that the very next day with your patients. And if you want, you can tweak it, subtract some things, put your handouts on there, even record your own videos. Now, recording your own videos is optional. The doctors who do that have seen a huge unlock, though, I will say, because when the patient sees you, your face, hears your voice, before they step foot in the office, they start feeling like they know you, developing a relationship, and that is very meaningful. I'll just share a specific anecdote. There's a physician who does prostate biopsies, and a source of anxiety was parking and finding the location of the biopsy suite in the hospital. So he took his phone and put it on his dashboard while he was driving. It was safe. It was like slow speed. And he's like narrating, so this is the parking lot you pull in. This is where you should go, parking over here near this elevator, and then walks into the elevator, pushes the button. You're going to the third floor. And then you, when you walk out the elevator, you go left. And I forget the woman's name at the desk. And then you're going to see Mary. Hi, Mary. Mary says, hi. And then you're going to go sit over here. And we send, this is incredible. We send anonymous surveys to patients that land on WellPrep pages. You should see, this is the most commented on video out of, and we're involved in approaching 100,000 patient visits a month. This video gets commented on by patients more than anything I've ever seen. I was super anxious about the biopsy, but that parking video, I removed my anxiety. I feel like I know exactly where to go and what to expect. That is totally unexpected from my perspective.
But I totally get it because I was taking a certification exam yesterday for the menopause certification and I drove to the local community college. I was driving around for 20 minutes, could not find the building, could not find the parking garage. I was more nervous about parking than taking the exam. I totally get it.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see a video like that.
Yeah, I would love it too as a patient. You know, you're going to have a colonoscopy, whatever. It doesn't matter. You can't picture what it's going to be like. And here's this very simple, low budget video. And now you can picture it and it takes away some of the uncertainty. So there's a lot of examples like that where, and some physicians have some trepidation about recording videos. So let me just speak to that. Every day, dozens of times a day, and thousands of times a year, you are unscripted talking to your patients over and over, describing things, low testosterone, erectile dysfunction, Peyronie's disease. You don't rehearse those, and they're not perfect. It's fine. You say, you pause awkwardly. It's fine. All you need to do is record it one more time, and then maybe never again.
Or there are technologies now that will take out the ums and the pauses.
That's true. That's true. The editing software now automatically takes that out. But I'm telling you from a patient perspective, because I see dozens of patient comments stream in every day. It's the authenticity of the videos that patients appreciate the most. And I think in the age of AI, authenticity is becoming almost a luxury. It's even more impressive to see a human being talking now than it was a few years ago, I think.
But I would agree with that.
Yeah.
As technology evolves, it will never replace us, but we have to become better at being humans, which means that's on us to be better humans.
Yeah, 100%. And this is why, you know, I see debates online, will AI replace doctors? And I kind of laugh every time. Humans want to be taken care of by other humans. I think that's going to, we'll see how that comment ages over time. But I really feel like that's a truism.
Well, here's what I heard recently at an AI and healthcare conference. Someone said, AI will not replace humans, but humans who use AI will replace those who do not.
I agree with that. I mean, I know we didn't expect to be talking about this, but all day long in the middle of clinic, I go on to Open Evidence. You use Open Evidence? Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love it.
It's amazing. So, I mean, one person can't be expected to have a brain so capacious that you can just call on the medical literature for every condition you see and have it be up to date. It's impossible. But I feel really great about, you know, I'll give you an example. Last week, I saw a patient who had oligometastatic renal cancer, and I just wanted to get a litmus test on what the latest pulse on cytoreductive nephrectomy is. And in 2 seconds, and I did it in front of the patient, and I involved them. And people,
they don't care. They're just happy you're looking it up. They don't care.
They actually love it. And, so, yes, that's an example. I'm using AI, and it gives me sort of a superpower in that moment, and patients appreciate it. And I, you know, it makes me a better doctor. I use an AI scribe in every visit, and I make more eye contact, and I'm more present in the moment, and the patients are prepared. So I'm just having the best time. I'm enjoying my clinic again because, again, let's go back to my reason for being lately, which is to try and get people back to the magic of being a doctor. I've put technology and systems in place to help bring back that focus on just the patient, just me and the patient. I don't have to worry about documenting. I don't usually have to worry about teaching 101 on every topic. And I'm up to date in a better way than I was before. How beautiful is that?
Yeah, it's exquisite. So let's go back to let's say a prostate cancer page in WellPrepped would look like. What are all the different modalities of media content that can be included on that page?
So if it can be linked to, it can be put on WellPrepped. So I'll give you an example. Videos may be obvious. PDF handouts, yes. But here's where
everything just has to live online.
It has to live online, or, you know, when it comes to handouts, you actually upload your handout and then it lives on Well-Prepped. But here's where it gets interesting. Because anything online can be linked, you can link to, say, a support group. Now, one of my great failings in my early career was I never consistently gave patients information about support groups. I always wanted to, and I think it's my job to do that. But there's so much on a doctor's plate. I never remembered to do that. So this is part of the beauty of a system like Well-Prepped. Every patient gets an experience that's the same as the best experience over and over again. Because every patient who passes through is going to see the same material. I'll never forget to give people a support group link. I never forget to have a prostatectomy patient buy a vacuum erection device. And then, you know, podcasts. Podcasts for patients are absolutely wonderful. And even surprisingly, the podcasts that we think are directed towards physicians, patients love them. So someone who's going in depth for an hour talking about penile rehabilitation, patients really can get great information out of that. This goes for any corner of urology. So that's part of what we populate: podcasts, support groups, medication information, links to purchase products online. Here's another example. You have somebody who is undergoing a cystectomy, life-altering operation. Two things I want to mention about that. One is Angie Smith at UNC had done a quality improvement project where she recorded videos on stoma care. Those videos had a couple hundred views until we put them on, you know, Well-Prepped seed content. And now thousands of patients who actually need to see those videos are seeing them at the point of care. How about a link to, you know, there's a stealth belt, ostomy belt. I have no disclosures, by the way, but I'm just giving that as an example. You want every patient with a stoma to buy a good stoma appliance device. Here's a way of systematizing it. So really, if you give careful thought for each of the main things you see, about what would the best patient experience look like? And then set it one time, and every single patient you see with that situation is going to have the best experience.
I love that. There are a few important points that I think are really good for people to know, and I just know this from using Well-Prepped in the past, is I think it's really important for people to understand how they like to communicate and how they communicate well. And there are a lot of people that, like, as you mentioned, may not want to get on video. And so maybe they just prefer communicating in written word. This application allows them to communicate in their preferred method, but then they can pull in other people's videos from that seed content or even not from the seed content. I have a page on erectile dysfunction and I offer shockwave therapy in my clinic, but Dr. Alex Tatum has created the best video of all time on shockwave therapy. I was never going to even attempt to recreate that video. And I included his video on my page and I'm like, you need to watch Dr. Tatum's video. So it still allows me to educate my patient, but not to have to do it myself.
Yes.
So that combination, I think, is really the magic.
Yeah, you touched on a couple points. One is that patients learn differently. Some are visual learners, some are auditory learners, some are, and you can meet the patient where they're at. And the idea of community is the second thing you brought up. Some of our doctors have, Dr. Ricardo Sanchez in Puerto Rico did a 16-minute video on risks of radical prostatectomy. And there are tons of Well-Prepped users who have his video. Now, does it matter that it's Ricardo in Puerto Rico giving this, you know, very detailed list of all the risks of prostatectomy? No, it doesn't matter. and patients will appreciate it nonetheless. And if you think about that, 16 minutes just to go over the risks is really what is required. And who has time for that in their day? We need to be working smarter. And we can do it together by helping each other and sharing the best of what we can come up with as a community.
So you've now described like the foundational well-prepped. And so you kind of solved that initial problem, right? That initial mission, but you're taking this mission further. So what's next for you? What's going on right now? What are the gears doing in your brain?
Yeah. So that's funny you say, so the gears never stop moving. I got some good advice from some other entrepreneurs outside of healthcare when I started WellPrepped. And one of the things they said is, listen to the users. Above all else, talk to the users and listen to them. So you're right. I think WellPrep for our users has solved a problem of making doctors' working life better. What we found, to our complete surprise, was that teams that were using WellPrep were using those pages to train their nurses, their medical assistants, and even the receptionists out in the front desk. So we thought, my God, this is totally unexpected. But what does it mean? It means that we've sort of created a knowledge base. Each one of these WellPrep pages is a knowledge base. What if we unlock it on purpose for the whole team? So that's what we've done now. And I'm excited to tell you, it's a new offering from WellPrep called WellPrepped Clarity. We take educational materials, all the handouts from the office, and we add in your policies and procedures. And by the way, if you don't have policies and procedures, you need policies and procedures.
I've only learned that now that I have my own practice is like, you need a playbook. Like
you need a playbook.
Need something that someone can reference.
Yeah. If someone says, how do we cleanse the room after BCG? And that's not written down somewhere. It probably should be. But so what we've done is we take all of this and it gets, for a practice, gets mapped, indexed, and embedded by AI. Imagine this 3D cloud of all that information and all the stuff about prior auths is clustered in one part of the cloud and all the stuff about medication refills is over here and the doctor's NPI numbers and tax IDs are over here. All the questions on how do we get stuff done are mapped in this cloud, and we give everyone on the team a simple chat interface. Imagine like ChatGPT, and they can ask any question about the practice. And so we've moved now from trying to improve the working life of doctors and patients, of course, by the way, to improving the working lives of everyone on the team. If you've been a doctor in practice for any longer than a year, you know that sometimes the questions that hit you probably shouldn't have. You've heard the question before. Somebody should have known the answer. And it's hitting you. Ideally, the questions that bubble up to the doctor should be seriously important questions so that you're working at the top of your license. If somebody comes to me telling me that after a TURP, the patient has grade 5 hematuria with clots and we're bringing them in for hand irrigation, they should be talking to me at that point, don't you think? But if the question is, do you do bowel preps for prostatectomy? You should know that already. Like, don't ask me that question if at all possible. So now we've made it so that by giving every employee clarity, we make every employee the go-to employee. And groups will run it through clarity before asking anyone else. And so I'm just super excited about this because I know this is a problem that every single practice faces in some way, shape, or form, that the way we do things is clustered in the brains of only a couple people.
And when they're out sick or out on vacation, everyone then feels the frustration.
Or maternity leave or a new hire.
Yeah.
Oh my God, a new hire. How on earth do we train them? Well, Clarity is the indispensable sidekick for the new hire. You have any questions about how we do it, just run it through Clarity. And then the cool thing is we've really purpose-built this for healthcare. Admins can look at all the unanswered questions in a dashboard and then answer them. And then the knowledge base becomes a living, breathing entity that keeps getting better.
So you've started onboarding clinics with this technology. What's been some of the early feedback?
So I told you with the Well-Prepped Foundation, with our educational product, the thing that lights me up is when a doctor contacts me and they're like, thank you so much. This really does work. I'm enjoying my conversations with patients. Like, that makes my year every time. What's happening now is fueling me in a different way. We showed this to, so every practice I alluded to has some go-to people that tend to know the answers to more questions, right? We went to the go-to person and we said, hey, let me show you this thing. Think of some questions that people ask you all day long. So she types in the first question, sees the answer. She goes, my God, that's correct. And she started laughing, like chuckling to herself. She puts in the second question. Same thing. She's like, yes. It was something like, who is allowed to book this type of appointment? And it said the answer, and it said, and they cannot be televisit. They have to be in person. It was something very specific. So she giggles again. She typed the third question in, and she saw the answer, and she started crying. And I'm just watching this thinking, my God, this is exactly what is going to fuel me for the next 5 years. I mean, we have, this is probably on repeat in every practice around the country. The how things are done concentrated in the brains of a few people, everyone else walking down the hall to ask them the question instead of looking it up somewhere. Other policies and procedures that nobody looks at. And if we bring it all full circle, let's think about a patient. Let's go back to that prostate cancer patient. All right. They've had a great experience with the doctor. They pre-educated themselves before they showed up. And now they're scheduled for surgery. And their pre-op instructions are all on Well-Prepped as well. But the night before, they're super stressed out. And at 10 p.m., they call the call center. I can't remember what I'm supposed to do about eating or drinking. Am I supposed to take my blood pressure meds? Now, the call center probably doesn't know the answer to this question. So they have two choices. They can say, we'll take a message and the team will get back to you as soon as they get in the morning, which of course is not going to work because they have to be at the hospital at 6 a.m. Or they're going to page the on-call doctor. They have a tool like Clarity. They can just type it in. What are the instructions the night before prostatectomy? And the call center is fed the exact same information that's on the handout, the exact same information that the scheduler told them and the doctor. That case is not canceled. The patient's excellent experience continues out from the doctor visit, and they come away saying, my God, this team is so in sync. Everybody's swimming in the same direction. And to me, like, that is excellent care, and it's also enjoyable for all the players, which is really what my goal is.
Yeah, you're really addressing one of those big pain points, which is the patient, one person getting different messages. When they talk to five different people, they get 10 different messages. And that's really confusing for patients and has contributed to, I think, some of the mistrust that patients have when they enter a healthcare setting because they don't know who to believe.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. Let me ask you a follow-up question. When you were talking about that person who started crying after that third question she entered in, why do you think she was crying?
I should have asked her that question.
Like, out of relief, out of like, I don't have to be everything for everybody, out of like the sense of like, yes, people can stop bothering me all day long with not having these silly questions, maybe a combination.
I think it's so, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. I think part of it might have been this looked to be a seasoned employee, like the last 10 years of her job flashing before her eyes, like, oh my God, like this has been my life. This is me all day long getting interrupted. And then it was like, it was when people cry, but it's sort of tears of joy while laughing. That's what it was. I think she was sort of imagining what life might be like in a different system where she may be able to share the information she has without getting bothered all day long. This feeling of relief. I think our go-to employees in all of our practices, to some degree, are exhausted from being the go-to person. And, you know, if you think about when you do clinic, you've got people that you really want there with you. And if somebody is on vacation and someone you haven't worked with is in your clinic, you sort of think, okay, today's not going to be as easy. What if everybody's doctor's preferences is in the knowledge base? So-and-so likes only one patient room at a time. Don't get vital signs unless the patient is falling off track. Always give a one-sentence summary of the history when you tell the doctor that they've been roomed. I don't know. We each have our quirks, right? But this is tribal knowledge that's easy to actually share if you decide to. So what if it's this employee who's taking over? I'm with Dr. Smith today. What are the things that she likes during clinic? And then boom, it's just a checklist. It's like seven things. That day is going to go better for everyone involved.
I can see this being such a useful tool in academic programs with the constantly revolving trainees. It's kind of like a quirk management system, shall we say. But I remember when I was at Penn, we would like pass along the quirks, right, from each attending physician. But it was kind of like playing this game of telephone. And you look at this document after several years and you're like, wait, is this still true?
Yes,
you also still can't
true, yeah.
Go, you like don't feel comfortable to go up to the attending to say, hey, is this still true? Is this actually what you want? So we just continue to play this game of telephone.
I do plan to unlock this for residents because I'm glad you brought it up. Talk about tribal knowledge. There's usually a shared drive in every residency program from chiefs that have long graduated that go through all the attendings, not just their quirks, but how they position for this operation, that operation. That should be knowledge accessible in a chat. I'm doing a PCNL with Dr. Jones today. Tell me the main things that aren't going to piss her off. You know, I mean,
I'm sure that would be one of the commonly asked questions. When I was at the University of Iowa, I was directing the medical student rotation. And so I created a document that had every attending's preferences, but I didn't ask the residents to complete it. I sent it out to every attending and I said, I need you to complete your preferences. Do you want medical students to see new patients, return patients? But you have to write the answers. And that way we know this information is actually true.
Did you get good response rates from?
Yeah, I mean, most people did it. And people who took a while, I just kept sending. And I said, I need you to give me your preferences.
And that makes things run better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. I love that.
So my next question, and we're going to wrap this up shortly, but if I could have a megaphone, and I don't, so sorry, Dave, I don't have a megaphone, but if you could share your message with other urologists and maybe healthcare systems, like what is your message about what this technology might do for them?
My message is this, and for this message, I'm going to borrow heavily from Stanford's model of occupational wellness. If you're in charge of a health system or you are in charge of a large private practice group, I'm sure that wellness, by now, wellness is probably on your radar. The problem is that most initiatives go after low-hanging fruit. The low-hanging fruit is usually in the resilience personal resilience camp, because you can remind people that they need to have good nutrition, remind people that they need to have good sleep, that they should engage in physical activity and exercise, et cetera, et cetera. But that's just low-hanging fruit. You can have a pizza party and you can organize a yoga event. Not to say that there's not a time and a place for that. But my message is, unless you improve workflow and you give people the tools and systems that are available to them 365 days a year, that's a litmus test to know if you're going to make an impact. If it's a one-off event or a one-off reminder, it will not make a lasting impact. Doctors are already resilient, just the most resilient, wonderful group of people you've ever met. They're begging for help with their workflow, and that is high-hanging fruit because the ideas are not as clear. How do we measure it? What do we do? And you do have to put money down. You have to buy systems. It will cost a little bit to improve workflows. And, you know, health systems that are adopting AI scribes is a perfect example of, in my opinion, doing it right, because that's available 365 days and you're improving workflow so that at the end of the year, when you say, we care about physician wellness, you can actually point to something you actually did. Patient education systems are in that category of addressing workflow problems to improve wellness of everybody on each team.
Dave, I love that message. I got some goose pimples while you were saying that. And I've never heard that phrase or term before about getting at the high-hanging fruit. And I love it. That's where the magic is.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep banging this drum for as long as I can. The high-hanging fruit was a title of a talk I gave to the music consortium. I forget how long ago, maybe 6 months ago. And I chose it because I don't think we're going to get out of this mess by doing easy things. We're going to get out of this occupational hazard that we're in with high burnout rates by doing really hard things, and sometimes by spending money to help the workforce. Suicide rates are too high. People looking for reasons to drop out of medicine left and right. In a group who tends not to complain, these are warning signs, and the way out is going to be challenging. So, you know, I'll give you another great example, because I like when people give tangible examples. When my health system offered sessions from epic experts to come to your clinic for an hour to help you revamp all of your dot phrases and shortcuts and everything, those were then available to you every day of the year. That's a perfect example. Like, that skyrocketed my efficiency and sent a message to me, my healthcare system really actually cares. Not, we're serving ice cream today in the cafeteria. Forget that. They sent somebody to be in my office for an hour to help me. But that's not easy, right? Think of the logistics involved. You got to pay somebody to come in to all the doctor's office. That costs money. And someone's got to coordinate which doctor's done it and which hasn't done it. That's hard. Telling people to get more sleep is super easy. It's not going to help.
Dave, for people who may be interested, which all of them should be, in terms of looking into your technology, where can they go to get more information? And maybe where does the cost start for like an individual provider and maybe a healthcare institution?
So the easiest way is to go to our website, wellprep.com. It's a deliberate misspelling, WELLPREPT.com. That's the best place to start. People can learn about WellPrep Foundation, the educational piece, WellPrep Clarity. We have two different sales motions. I'm happy to tell you that a lot of people come to us and it becomes a bottom-up approach. One intrepid doctor in a system or a private practice group or an academic practice has the courage to try this thing. And they try it and it works. And then they bring it to their team with data. Look at this patient engagement data that I got. My patients are coming in saying thank you, and then it spreads up from there. It's around $79 per user per month for the foundation model. And for large systems, it ends up being around, this just ballpark, around $1,000 per doctor per year. The return on investment for an investment that small and the outsized impact on patient satisfaction, reducing no-shows, physician satisfaction in the workplace is, there's an outsized impact. The Clarity product is so new, I would hesitate to announce pricing just yet, but similarly affordable for the outsized impact of being able to have everyone on your team suddenly know how things are done.
Yeah, and the message that you just said is very clear. It is not cost prohibitive. A lot of the innovative technologies these days, they sound amazing, but they are quite expensive. And yours is not expensive. And that's very important. Awesome. Dave, it was so good to chat with you today. I love that you're trying to pay this forward to help people who are coming after you, to help people your own age, and to help people who are really of any age try to bring the magic in, you know, back into the bedside. It's so awesome. And I love that you continue to innovate what you're doing. I can't wait to see what's next.
Thank you so much. We're going to keep doing whatever we can to improve the working lives of everyone on the team. I really enjoyed our conversation. You clearly get it. Your questions were right on point, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, Dave, thanks again. And folks, thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Pearls and Perspectives.